National Council of Jewish Women Oral History Project. My name is Mildred Menlo, and with my colleague, Ruth Weiner, we are interviewing Mr. Hans Jonas at his home.
In checking back over the notes, we were not able to locate the name of Simon's wife, her first name. We know her last name was
right,
Burke.
Right. That was his second wife. His first wife, I think his first wife was somehow related to Izzy Binstock.
Oh, what a coincidence,
yeah. And that's the connection that we have with them. But Dorothy can tell you, you know Dorothy.
Surely.
She knows.
She really knows
history.
Yeah. All right. And about when was it that you moved above Poise?
We moved to Squirrel Hill in probably in the fall of 39 and lived at 2326 Murray Avenue on the second floor. And the following year, we moved to Poise.
I said it was 1940.
Right.
I was a little confused about who opened the studio in the Carlton House. Well, it was not you, it was your...
My father's partner.
The partner, yes.
Right.
All right.
Her name was Amelia Deacon, and
Amelia.
She... Deacon, D-E-A-K-I-N. And she had the connection with what was then called society. She didn't have any money, but she had the connection because her maiden name was Lee. And the Lees were all Pittsburgh money.
Where that's L-E-E?
L-E-E, right.
I want to check it to make sure. Fine. I want to make sure we've had trouble in the past.
Can happen.
Good. We kind of left off and we were talking about the children, your marriage, children, and so forth. Tell us a little about how you met your wife. You were starting to talk about her education, her career.
We met in high school. And there was a whole group of us that sort of dated within the group. And we all would go out together. We'd go to the Y dances Saturday night. We all would crash weddings. And then I went to the Army. And after I came back, we dated again. And we were married in 51. Many of that group, those that are still in Pittsburgh, we still see them. They're still our close friends. Because we've known each other 50, 55 years, and that's the way it is.
We were beginning to talk about her going back to school.
After she had... all three children, she decided that she would like to go back to school. So the joke is that I called her father and I said, you know, your daughter would like to go to college. So he said, fine, send her. She started off by going to night school. Being older, she didn't think she could compete with young children. So she started to take two or three classes, one at a time at night. And she didn't know how to type. She still doesn't know how to type. That's the only thing that I know, is how to type. So I would type all her papers. So vicariously, I took all the courses that she did. And eventually, she went back full-time. She saw that she could do it. It took her 7 years. And she and my oldest daughter, Carol, graduated the same year.
Oh,
I made them both go to graduation. Carol went to Penn State and June went to Pitt, and it was fun.
Yes, that's wonderful. Yeah. I give her a lot of credit for
that. Oh, absolutely.
What was her specialty?
She's a fine arts major. She would paint and mostly abstractions. And she was, in order to get into the program, she had to submit to Virgil Cantini, who ran it, who's now my neighbor in the studio, two doors away. And Virgil is, very opinionated, domineering person, but he's terrific at what he does. He's a great sculptor. And when she submitted her work in order to get admission to the school, he said, well, for a woman, it isn't too bad. Well, that's enough. That's that. But they had a very good relationship, and he's a good neighbor. It's funny because his wife also teaches.
Have you seen the International?
Not yet. Last Saturday was the opening, and we were supposed to go, but I was on a shoot. So I'm going to go on a Tuesday morning when there aren't too many people there. And I'm right across the street, so it's easy. No good. But that's the way it is. It's experimental. It's not supposed to be what you're used to.
Discuss it another time.
Okay.
All I know is that one of my friends who went with me at one particular exhibit where they had a lot of woodworking said, he took manual training.
It's and they have them from all over the world. They have things there that I don't understand. I don't understand. What makes this good?
I defy any docent to make it intelligent.
Maybe. Well, they'll... June's a docent at the zoo now. And they tell you what to say about each animal. Most of it is true. And, no, because someone right in the crowd may know.
That's right.
But these are artists that experiment. And a lot of these things will be forgotten, but maybe one or two things will be the thing in 100 years that other people will say,
You are so right.
Sure.
We'll talk about that later, too. Fine. When you were married, for example, talk a little bit about your married days, raising the children, where you lived after you were married.
After we were married, we moved into an apartment at King and Wellesley. For 1 year, and June's father had a small grocery store at Highview and Heath, so she would help him out, and especially if he went away, she would be in the store. And the year after that, we moved to a house on Morningside, 1157, and the first thing we got was a dog, because she always wanted a dog. And the second thing we got was a fence.
Yes.
And we were there for the... All three children grew up in there. And about, 10 years later, the house was too small. It was 6 rooms, 1 bathroom, although... A lot of people did very nicely in 6 rooms and 1 bath. So we started looking for another house, and what we found was too far away from school. The children would have to walk. So we had an architect named Fred Fargetstein, who was a friend of the Berman family. And he said, why don't you stop looking, and I will add on to this house whatever you want, and we'll totally redo the inside. And that's what he did. So we doubled the capacity, and we were there until 10 years ago. All the children went to Morningside, then they went to Peabody, and And then they each went to different colleges. Amy went to Penn State. Carol went to Penn State, and then Marla went to IUP. And I sort of thought that undergraduate work can be fine in the state of Pennsylvania. If you want to go to a graduate school, you can go anywhere you want. Amy went to Baltimore, social work. Marla has two graduate degrees. I think both are from Duquesne. They wanted to specialize in different areas. And 10 years ago, you know, the house was too big. We were just the two of us. So we sold it, and I was perfectly willing to go to a normal apartment. But June didn't want to. She wanted something a little more unique, so we found she found this. The woman that owned it wouldn't sell it when the building was originally sold, when the Harry W. Brown estate was sold. She would not sell this because she use the garage downstairs, which really will hold four cars, as a place to make set designs for the Nickety Knockety Players, which was a puppeteer
show. I remember.
And she was very active in this. And she was very secretive. The house was never on the market. She told a friend of hers who was an agent that she would like to sell it, but the agent was not allowed to bring anybody up, and she didn't know. She had to know who was going to come to look at it, and she had to know you or someone that she knows you. So we knew the Hennies, who were next door to us in East Liberty, very four generations jewelry store. And she knew the Hennies, so we were allowed to come and see it once. And what she did, she had lived in each of these four apartments. When she got old and she couldn't make the steps anymore, then she went downstairs. And she redid them all, except these two, this one and the one next door. The two downstairs apartments are just... The front apartment is the old stable, but she kept all the wood, and she took the dance floor from the main house and put it in here when they tore the main house down. And the other apartment downstairs she made into what would look like a Portuguese fishing village inside. The walls do not go up to the ceiling from the bedroom, they just almost go up to the ceiling. I mean, just strange. But it's nice, it's unique, and it's interesting.
Yes, yes.
This was a total disaster because the roof line slanted down to where it came to about 12 inches off the floor. So we had to lift the roof for, I don't know, 50 feet. And the architect that I had for this was Joel Cronick. Joel likes to restore things on the inside but leave the outside alone, which is what he did. And I was perfectly willing to move to the Park Plaza, but June didn't want to. So
this is unique. Isn't it?
Yes, and it's nice, it's airy, it's close, it's close to Shadyside, close to Squirrel Hill. And we've been here for 10 years.
While you were raising the children, were there any special traditions, you know, as far as the children were concerned, special affiliations, something of this sort?
When the children were very young, because we lived very close to June's parents' house, and her grandfather was kosher, strictly, there was a greater attention paid to holidays and tradition. Her grandfather went to shul every morning, but he did not insist that you go. So if you wanted to sit at the Seder and sing all the songs till the very end, that was fine. You can go and do whatever you want. So he was a great influence on her and on the children too, because he had time. I did not have time. I spend a lot of time in the studio, and with weddings, I worked Saturday and Sunday, so I was not home on the weekends like the quote traditional fathers are. But June took up the slack and made sure that everybody was well taken care of. When you give something, when you give up something, you give up then you get something,
yes.
And then
that's
the way it is.
Yes, that's the way it is.
And she always realized that. There was never any of this, well, I want you to stay home and don't take this assignment because I want you home on Sunday. There was never that. Even to this day, if we want to go away, and we go a great deal now, she will call Pat, my manager, and say, is he free these 2 weekends? Can we go away? If I'm committed to you, I will not go away. I don't care what. Because I'm really more interested in something interesting in the studio than going to Florida or New Mexico. You know, I've been there. So I can go a week later. Of course, in the old days, I was sending children to college, and I needed more. And now, I'm not sending children to college, and I need less, but I enjoy it more. So, why should I give it up? I don't.
Talk a little bit more about your career in the studio, where you started, what...
Well, I really started, I was always part of it, even in Vienna. We had 2 studios in Vienna. One was called the Adele Studio, and my father was a partner in that. And that was in the downtown area, Graben, which is the center of the city. And this is the studio that the emperor and subsequently, when it became a republic, Dollfuss, who was the chancellor, and Schuschnigg, who was the following chancellor, would come to, and their families. As a matter of fact, I went to a photographic antique show, and they were selling some old photographs in one of the booths, and I found 2 pictures from the Adele studio.
Oh.
I said to the guy, anytime you get more, I'll buy them. I don't care what. So... that was one studio that was a prestige studio, but it never made any money. It was fine to have, because they were purveyors, just like the Queen of England has someone who brings the grain and someone who provides all the scotch. Right. The Dell studio was Kaiserliche Königliche Hoffotograf, which meant that they were the photographers for the royal family. And the other studio that made a lot of money was in the 14th or 15th district. And it was like a working man's studio, and like our north side used to be. And that's the building is still there. There's something else in there now.
And your role as a child there?
I was a child there. You know, they would take me there and they'd show me around. And, you know, you're 10, 11 years old. It's fine.
Mm-hmm.
And when we came here, the sudden shock of not having any money, I mean, nothing, you know. Nobody was there to take care of the children. I mean, where's the governess? What governess? You know, where is the cook? You are the cook. That was quite a shock. Simon Jonas, whom we'd stayed with for about 6 months, lived in Hazelwood, 149 Hazelwood Avenue. And, you know, this was his second wife, and she wasn't too thrilled having a family of four or five, suddenly be with them. I mean, we're doubling the population of this little house. They lived downstairs in a duplex. So, and having nothing, I mean, not $50, not $5, made everybody very nervous. So my mother went and got a job. Now, she worked for a woman in Squirrel Hill named Mrs. Birkenfield. I don't know if you know, she's an English teacher. I don't know if she's still living, but I saw her some time ago. She was an English teacher in the school system. And they traded lessons in English for babysitting. And my mother was, this is 39. She would be 45 years old. A woman that came from, all of a sudden became a babysitter. Never took care of her own kids. All of a sudden took kids, somebody else's. Anyway, but my mother spoke French, and she had Latin and Greek in school, so English wasn't too hard to learn. And when she wasn't there, she would listen to the radio just to get the pronunciation. And her English was pretty decent. Then she would read an enormous amount of reading. So then when my father came, which was in the summer of 39, we were 6 months sort of alone. And he came to Simon's house, and that's when we moved to Squirrel Hill, almost, I guess, within. And then, he got his old job back. He went to his old boss from 1920, and he said, "Can I have my job back?" And he said, "Sure." And then paid him $15 a week. And then about a year later, he and the woman, the secretary, bought the studio. They needed a camera. They had the big camera for the studio, but they needed a smaller camera to go take pictures at weddings, because the fella that owned the studio decided that he wanted this camera for himself. So I went to the Hebrew Free Lounge, and he borrowed $100. Bothered him, but he did it. And it was my job to go and pay that back every Sunday morning, $2. Now, he had to go on the streetcar from Squirrel Hill to the Hill District, where the Hebrew Free Lounge met every Sunday. I used to get sick on the streetcar. So I would go and take it down there, and then I would walk some of the way. And after that, paid the $2 back. And I had to take another streetcar to the north side to deliver negatives, because he was retouching for other photographers. And it was the 7754, I remember it. And I would take that part way, and then I would walk the rest of the way. And one of the photographers would give me a nickel as a tip, and I would take that nickel to Isley's and get the biggest ice cream cone. It's huge. About 15 years ago, there was a ice cream parlor opened up on South Craig Street. A fellow named Baskin who used
Baskin
to be...
Baskin and Rowe.
Yes. And when they opened it up, it was very expensive ice cream. So I went in and I said, just give me one scoop. It was $1.15. It's fine. I gave it $1.15 and I said to her, you know, my entire fourth grade class could have gone to Isley's for $1.15. That ice cream cone. What?
That's true.
Right?
Right.
So, the studio in Squirrel Hill, the one above Poli's, was sort of a stopgap measure while he was still working for Clarence Burley. And he would work for the Burley studio, you know, 9 to 5, and then he would come home at night, and then he would have his appointments, maybe one or two, and on the weekends. But all that stopped when he bought the one in East Liberty.
And in the meantime, you were helping?
I was helping. I was doing whatever's necessary. We had handbills that I would deliver. You know, you had to get known. In the old days, you used to have to wash prints for 2 hours in running water. Now, the summit wasn't bad, but in the winter it was too damn cold. So, but that's the way it was, and I got a nickel an hour. Finally, his partner, Mrs. Deacon, said, you can't pay him a nickel an hour. You've got to give him more money than that. So he did. In those days, if you really wanted to learn photography, you had to work for someone who knew. If you worked for somebody good, then you became good. Like Karsh, a photographer in Canada. He went to his uncle in either Cleveland or Dayton, and he worked for him, and he worked with him. And then he went to Canada and expanded on his own, and we had a very, still living today, has a great international reputation. Today, if you want to learn photography, you can go to school. You can get a master's, you can get a doctorate. There are schools, but now universities have accredited courses. But I learned from him, and then I went on. Everybody sort of finds his own niche after you copy whatever somebody else is doing. And it's worked out nicely. We have, it's the kind of business that you don't need me every day. It's not like groceries or clothing or even accounting. But if you do need me and you come back 10 or 15 years later, I love that. And most of the people that are come in today have been there before. 70% of the people that walk in have been there before, either with me or my father. Louis Tilada, the decorator,
mm-hmm.
My father did his parents' wedding portraits in 1920. You know, so that's...
You did our wedding and also their 25th anniversary.
So there you are.
We'll be back for the 50th soon.
All right. Love it. About next December 26th, Jack Donahue and Rodora are going to be married 50 years, and that was the first wedding that my father took me to a few days after I came out of the Army. That's when I really became serious about, you know, photography. And that's all you have to do, stick around.
Yeah. And be receptive.
Yeah.
Back a little bit to the children and life at that time. A little bit about what you were your vacations with the children, what your hobbies might have been during that time, the kind of social life through those years.
The children always had their own vacation, and so did we. My sister-in-law had a cottage on the lake in upstate New York. And in the early days, we would all go there for a couple of weeks. And it was very nice, and there was a lot of, you know, togetherness. In the later years, I would drive them up, stay overnight, and then drive back the next day, and 2 weeks later, come and go and get them. I'm not particularly interested in fishing and outdoor and all of that. But the kids liked it, and it was fun. And then they all went to camp in addition to that. But as a family, did we ever go away together? Once in a great while, maybe someplace like historical sites in eastern Pennsylvania, Gettysburg, something like that. But only a...
I'm going to check the tapes okay. About a half. End of tape 2, side 1, to be continued on the other side.